Guess there's no use in hanging round. Guess I'll get dressed and do the town. I'll find some crowded avenue, though it will be empty without you. Can't get used to losing.
Good morning. It's 9:30 here at Sun Sounds of Arizona in Tucson. Mark DeGroft with you this morning with the reading of the Green Valley News for the 18th day of June, Wednesday. Happy birthday, Sir Paul McCartney. Let's take a look at the current weather. Currently it's 95 degrees. We're well on our way to a high of 108. After a low of 73, tonight it'll be 73 as well. Winds out of the south-southwest, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, very hot, high looking around 112. As I said, it's currently 95 degrees. The humidity is 13%. So let's go ahead and see what's happening here in our world. The reading of the Green Valley News kicks off with the driver of an SUV headed north on the East Frontage Road in Elephant Head lost control Sunday, leaving the road and crashing into heavy brush. Pima County Sheriff's Department, Santa Rita Fire District, and the EMS units responded to the single vehicle accident north of Aravaca Road about 5 o'clock in the evening. The frontage road was blocked for about an hour, and according to deputies, the vehicle went down an 8-foot drop into dense, woody vegetation. The driver was treated at the scene, and the vehicle was brought up out of the brush and sustained front-end heavy damage. Well, if you haven't figured it out already, it's going to be a hot week. Just wait until tomorrow. That's when Green Valley and Suarita are forecast to see 111 degrees. Tucson, try 114. Thursday is the first day of a two-day National Weather Service extreme heat warning that runs through Friday. Triple digit temperatures expect to continue into Saturday, and Sunday's forecast is only 97. Weather Service issued the warning on Monday afternoon that includes the Tucson metropolitan area and much of southeastern Arizona. Generally, an extreme heat warning is triggered when the maximum heat index temperature is expected to be 105 degrees or higher for at least 2 days. At the nighttime temp, don't drop below 75. But the criteria vary across the country, especially for areas not used to extreme heat conditions. For example, Juneau, Alaska is seeing its first ever official heat advisories from the National Weather Service. The advisories, newly announced for all of Alaska at different temperature levels last week, are based on newly available data about people's susceptibility to heat in the state compared to other parts of the United States. The first advisory was issued Friday for Fairbanks with a forecast high of 85 degrees on Sunday. The highest temperature ever recorded in Juneau, the state capital, was 90 degrees back in 1975. As for us here in Arizona, the warning advised people to limit time outdoors, make sure your pets and children aren't left in unattended vehicles, as the temperatures inside them can reach lethal levels within just minutes, and drink plenty of fluids, stay in air-conditioned rooms, stay out of the sun, check up on your relatives and neighbors, the Weather Service warning reported. Well, a Republican-led committee renewed tensions over selling public lands after it added a provision to a reconciliation budget bill that's working its way through the United States Senate. Senator Mike Lee, the Republican out of Utah, chairs the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee that added a provision to dispose of 2 million to 3 million acres of Bureau of Land Management and U.S. Forest land, which are public-owned lands that are managed by the government. The provision states the two agencies' secretaries must identify 0.5% to 0.75% of land under its management for disposal by competitive sale, auction, or other methods designed to secure not less than fair market value. The provision calls for the disposal requirements to be met within 5 years. The provision, as part of the Senate's reconciliation to the One Big Beautiful Bill Act The budget reconciliation approved by the House on May 22nd could receive Senate approval by the holiday, July 4th. The bill would then go back to the House for approval. The House had removed public land sale provisions after pushback from Republicans who were needed to get the bill passed. The Green Valley News asked Representative Juan Ciscomani's office if he would oppose the reconciliation coming in from the Senate that had the public land sales included in it. A spokesman didn't provide a direct response, but sent an email stating that Ciscomani was pleased the provisions were stripped from the House reconciliation bill. The spokesman said Ciscomani was unaware of new land sale provisions, but that the Senate hadn't finalized anything just yet. The congressman continues to closely monitor the bill and will carefully consider changes made by the Senate to public land provisions in the reconciliation bill, Communications Director Andres Kardonsky wrote. In a video about the provision, Lee said the sales were aimed at underutilized land that would support housing and local development and to get Washington, D.C. out of the way of communities that are just trying to grow, he said. The provision affects 11 western states, including us here in Arizona. The provision would provide 5% of the land sale to the state in which it occurred, 5% to the agency that managed it, and 90% to the U.S. Treasury. In addition to Lee's statements about the provision providing support to housing and local development, supporters also say it would help fund tax cuts in the big, beautiful bill. Opponents, meanwhile, are concerned it's a land grab that will put public recreation areas and wild habitats at risk for development. Arizona Senator Mark Kelly released a statement Tuesday saying that he would oppose any effort to sell Forest Service land in Arizona. The public lands are part of who we are, as they support our economy, protect our environment, and offer Arizonans a place to hunt, to hike, and to explore, his statement said. Selling them off to fund Trump's tax giveaways to billionaires is reckless and wrong. Once they're gone for good, lost forever to public use and conservation. The Wilderness Society reported Arizona had 8.4 million acres of Forest Service land, plus another 6 million acres of BLM land. TWS also published a map with more than 250 million acres of public lands it says are eligible for sale in the commission's provisions. TWS sourced its data on Monday from the provisions text, BLM, Forest Service, U.S. Geological Survey, and the National Park Service. TWS's map includes Madera Canyon, parts of Mount Wrightson, and BLM parcels around the Green Valley and Sahuarita area, but the provision exempts federally protected land, including national monuments, recreation areas, and land within the National Wilderness Preservation System. The provision calls for the agency secretaries to consult with the state governor for housing development suitability and any local governments and tribes where the land for disposal is located and may provide them the right of first refusal. The provisions also allows interested parties to nominate land to the agencies for disposal. The nominators would need to state how the development would address local housing needs, including supply and affordability, or any associated community needs. Well, 15 years ago, an oversized ex-cop showed up at the door. It was an incongruous moment. He was the delivery mechanism for his wife Denise's business, bearing soaps and lotions, as I recall. We would hook up late years later on a golf course when we swapped stories. His were better. Ken Baggin grew up in the Fishing Society of Seattle. His grandfather and father were commercial fishermen. They would traverse the Bering Sea for halibut, cod, salmon, and crab. The boats usually had a crew of six. They fished from six to six, Baggin recalled. When I was a kid, I worked on the boat. It was grunt work. Sometimes I'd spend a day emptying the hold of a catch. My father and others were always generous and thoughtful. They would drop off some of their catch to various widows of fishermen. What I really wanted was to play football. A brief stop at Yakima Valley College convinced Baggin that other life vocations were more appealing. With the influence of friends, he pursued police work. He signed up for cadet school in 1965 and joined the Seattle Police Department 3 years later. "I love the role of a beat cop," he reminisced. "It puts you right in the heart of the community." His stint on the streets was interrupted when a candidate for mayor recounted a story of how policemen in Seattle would walk elderly ladies to businesses. He used that example of how he wished it would be a shining example of the Seattle Police Department. Bagan, who was present, introduced himself. Charles Royer would win, and he appointed Bagan to be lead on his security team. And Royer was elected 3 times. Ken Bagan became a local commodity and a known commodity of the Seattle Police Department. 4 years ago, Bagan was liaison between police union and the mayor's office. Eventually, he begged off further service from the mayor. Royer asked him if he could help Bagan get placed anywhere else in the department. Bagan told him he'd find his own way back to the streets. During his 29 years as a Seattle cop, Bagan saw and did almost everything that comes with the job. "I love working the jail," he said. "The food was great." He was elevated to detective and specialized in burglary. He worked undercover, even letting his hair grow with a ponytail. I wish he had a picture of that. There were some harrowing moments, including a nun arming a drunk with a rifle. But on the amusing side of the job, Bagan and others responded to a silent alarm at a large Sears store. After the team separated, gunfire broke out and all the respondents ran to the area. The sport venues of Seattle offered gigs that protected various celebrities. The three stood out for Bagan. Chuck Knox, the NFL coaching great, was a really good guy. I saw a good deal of him when he was attending a basketball game I was assigned to. He spotted me and said, "Hey, Kenny, can't you get a real job?" Charles Barkley was another favorite. Bagan would share some beers with the NBA great. He recalled when Barkley returned to the 76ers bench after a tough performance, he plopped down next to Bagan, querying, "So how was your day?" Bagan mentioned that the nicest of the celebrities was Andre the Giant. "He would join us after an event, and he was a mountain of a man. We would drink schooners of beer while he drank pitchers of beer." Mega personality Elvira was escorted by Bagan. A photo op was set up. Bagan was wearing a serious face, and she noticed. "You need to smile, officer," she told him. When the bulbs flashed, she patted his butt. That picture captures the moment. Bagan took nearly medical leave due to injuries suffered in an attack. He was jumped by 3 men. Following a movie script, Bagan took his blows and subdued them all. After pulling the pin, he worked the U.S. Marshals Service 8 years, and later he and Denise, married in 1992, would move to Quail Creek. She had sold her business in Seattle and started a new one here in Green Valley. Bagan put in 2 years with the Marshals Service in Tucson. Denise and Ken repeatedly showed unmeasured generosity, and through the years they generously turned their businesses over to others. Kristen Wright assumed ownership locally of Denise's Desert Rain, featuring lotions. And sadly, Denise passed away in 2023. Policing wasn't his lone talent. He used his early years in a fishing boat to become a highly sought knife sharpener. "I don't charge much, far less than the going rate," Bagan said. "I do it because I like to." He modifies the old warning about bringing a knife to a gunfight, and he embraces both. And Bagan also loved making furniture. "Were I to do things over my life, I might have pursued that instead," he said. Golf's a long-time passion. For years, he provided entertainment for the Seattle Retired Police Officers Association. Upon leaving, he noticed a banjo. "Yours?" "Yeah." "Do you play?" "Yeah, and I'm learning harmonica." Ken Bagan, beat cop and Renaissance man. 45 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock here at Sun Sounds of Arizona, Tucson. Good morning. Santa Rita Lodge owner Steve Holt has a word of advice for anybody looking to avoid the heat by escaping to Madera Canyon. Slow down. Thanks to 2 inches of rain on June 1st, the rabbits and deer finally have a little bit of grass to nibble on, but it's mostly along the side of the road. All the runoff from the road makes the accumulation of rain within that first 2 or 3 feet of the roadway. That's up to like the equivalent of 6 inches of rain, so I always tell everybody be careful as you approach it, he said. Holt, whose family bought the lodge in 2006, began visiting the canyon in 1998. as may become quite familiar how capricious the weather can be. He worried all the way through the 2006-07 drought, and he remembers the U.S. Forest Service forcing him to close the lodge in 2010 when the dry conditions made it too dangerous for any visitors. What's going on now is what he calls a short-duration, high-intensity drought. His well is still flowing, albeit slower, and there's still water in the springs in the higher elevations. This year has been very odd. We had that warm, dry winter, and then suddenly it got cold in like February, March, and April. We had snow in March up here. I mean, this is just like unheard of. And then we got that weird July 1st rain, and we had 16th under 2 inches of rain on June 1st, which has never happened in my years of living up here. He's hopeful this year's monsoon will be healthy, especially since the acorns and the junipers, berries that the skunks and the quidamundis, the raccoons, deer, and bear rely on, and them ran out of last December and January. I've been kicking around through the leaves underneath trees looking for any evidence of acorns left over, and the critters have just raked through all of the leaves. They found every single acorn, and there hasn't been a juniper berry either, Holt said. They're not even close to being ripe yet, and those two food sources are what will drive the bears. If there isn't any available, that'll drive them toward humans. So far, he's got one cinnamon-colored black bear becoming a nuisance near hummingbird feeders that he leaves out for the bats, but he's been successful at scaring them away. I've had some people say, like, hey, what are you doing? We're trying to take pictures. Well, I'm trying to save the bear's life, Holt said. If he becomes too accustomed to people, Arizona Game and Fish will relocate him, and he could be killed by other bears, Holt said. And squirrels are so hungry, they're even eating suet made with hot chili peppers, which is supposed to deter them, he said. We need these rains. The good thing about the rain is the minute the ground gets saturated, all of the grubs, all of the beetles, those food sources come close enough to the surface that they can flip logs, rotting logs. They can flip big rocks and find those food sources until the acorns and the juniper berries are on the ground again. Doug Moore, who's the education director with the Friends of Madera, said it's getting harder and harder to predict from 1 year to the next what's going to happen in the canyon. They saw a good variety of bird species coming through in April and May, but whether they stayed or to nest is a question, Moore said. Hopefully there's enough food to keep the birds here, and I just don't know if there will be or not. It would be interesting to see how it turns out. So I hate to be vague, but I know, but you know, it's really not an exact, that's a strange sentence. It's things are changing so much with climate change, and every year now is so different. You just never know what's going to happen, Moore said. We didn't have many annuals come up last year, so that may affect the insects this year. It's a real connected cycle, and you don't really know how until you're into the summer, into the monsoon, just what the results are going to be from the previous year on this coming one. Moore also noted that almost all of evergreen oak trees in the canyon dropped their leaves in May, which is a sign of extreme stress, and without rain they won't be able to put out any new growth. The trees provide food, nesting sites, and shelters for birds, mammals, and insects. Holt said that an early June storm definitely had an impact on the deer. Prior to that rain, I could see their ribs. I call them zombie deer. They'll just stand around and you can drive right up next to them. They're just so hungry they have no calories to react to things. And now you look at them and their bellies are bloated because all they're eating is the new grass roots, he said. They look happy. I mean, their eyes are bright and they're shiny again and they're perked up, which again brings him back to the need for caution. If you see one deer, slow down. Look in the direction it came from because there's probably another deer that's going to jump out, Holt said. I always tell people, you don't hit the deer you see, you hit the one that's coming and following the one that you see. Holt said he would love it if the canyon saw a series of hard rainstorms like in past years. We're about a week out from the rains and what all the forecasts are saying, and it feels like it's going to be a good monsoon. There's something about the air, and I was talking to some kids and everything, and it's like there's something different this year that makes me feel like we're going to get a traditional monsoon, he said. But you know, if not, if nature's got some other plans, well, we're going to find out. The National Weather Service and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration anticipate a 33% to 40% lean towards a wetter than normal monsoon. The monsoon season runs from June 15th through September 30th. Families struggling to feed and clothe their children will have one more resource available to them come fall, the Sororita Unified School District. After years of imagining it, the school district is turning classrooms at Sapori Elementary School and Sororita Primary School into resource centers. We've been talking about how to serve kids best and how to remove those barriers from instruction, said Jess Banny, SUSD Director of Student Services. What we know is that if kids are hungry, or if they have hygiene issues, or if kids don't have uniforms or shoes or backpacks or snack packs, they're probably thinking about that and not thinking about how to engage in the classroom. So if we can do something to kind of mediate that, we're going to. Families from all over the 606 square mile district can visit the resource centers before or after school or by appointment, Manny said. The centers will run with the help of grants, donations, and community partnerships. In our ideal dream world, it will look like a store and be very comfortable for families to come in a very discreet and respectful way and be supported in getting non-perishable snack packs or hygiene items or information about our community partners, different services they might offer, Penny said. I'd love to see clothing racks, you know, with sizing things. So it's very easy to go and say, you know what, I need a medium in this uniform shirt. Here we go. Here's our uniform shirt. If the district receives enough donations, parents will also be able to pick up regular clothes, jackets and diapers and backpacks, school supplies too, she said. They also plan to donate items from every school's lost and found after a reasonable amount of time has passed, Banny said. She said they'd also take a look at a couple of computers so parents can register the kids for school, pay their bills, search for jobs, or register for classes. We've talked with the Sororita Food Bank and Valley Assistance Services, so we know that they will be partners on this. We're looking into grants for additional support and, of course, donations for the items that we were hoping to have in the centers, Benny said. SUSD social workers Ocean Atterbury and Lee Berkey said they envision the resource centers adding more services as time goes on and once additional funding sources are found, and maybe one day they'll even have washers and dryers, Atterbury said. A group of us social workers, counselors, myself and our assistant director, went and looked at a very well-done and well-known high school resource center at Palo Verde High School, said Banny. We have a computer lab for parents, and they brought in partnerships to teach English language classes and financial literacy classes. So maybe in 3 to 5 years, that's something that ours can look like. Atterbury said she was reading about a resource center in another state where the school district superintendent offered an hour of laundry time for each hour a parent volunteered at a school. I think in the long run, but not quite yet, but I think doing things like that and tying in the community as much as possible will really be a huge benefit. Manny agreed. What we know is when parents and guardians are more involved and are on campus and feel like real tangible part of the school community, outcomes for their kids are better, Manny said. So that's the end goal, better student outcomes. Well, maybe not better, but the most optimal student outcomes. Remove every barrier, create every partnership with parents and the community to make sure kids have what they need to be successful, whatever that looks like for that kid. As for rooms furnishings, Banny said they will be repurposing cubbies and shelving discarded this summer during bond-funded renovations at other schools. The location of the centers will also play a role, she said. At SPS, for example, families will be able to enter the center through an outside door near the bus lanes. They won't need to walk through the school or through the campus, she said. Berkey would also like to get students from the district's film and TV programs to prepare public service announcements about the centers that could be shown in a loop in the counseling areas of the schools and elsewhere. Berkey would also like to get students from the district's film and TV programs to prepare other safety program announcements. And while the district social workers, counselors, and principals have already developed relationships with those that are most in need, they plan to have a grand opening when the centers open, probably in 4 or 5 weeks into the new school year, probably around parent-teacher conference night. I think we should just throw a party, maybe have food trucks, music, show people the space, invite the community, sponsors and donors and things like that. Really be able to show this is what we're able to trying to do here, Atterbury said. It is 9:56. Very quickly, Oklahoma, also known as the Sooner State, is known for its production of oil and natural gas, abundance of wheat fields, and contributions to the cattle industry as the home of 39 federally recognized Native American tribes for its Western history and culture. And the Suarita High School girls volleyball is holding open gym workouts for freshmen, new and returning players every Tuesday and Thursday from 3 to 6 p.m. in the Suarita High School gym. For more information, email girls volleyball head coach Dominic Argenziano at darganziano, that's darganziano1 at gmail.com. There's a golf fundraiser. Suarita Post 131 Rough Riders Baseball is holding its annual golf tournament fundraiser for the Suarita High School Baseball Program. That'll happen on October 18th at the Haven Golf Course. For more information or promotional opportunities, you can head to the Suarita Mustangs Baseball Facebook page or call Sam Gallardi at 520-548-5729 or Dustin Hills at 520-450-0510. And Suarita High School Baseball's Ezra Vidal, Yasu Martinez, Colton Johnson, E.J. Mayer, and Robbie Garcia earned first-term Southern Arizona Baseball All-Star honors from All Sports Tucson. Walden Grove High School Baseball's Javi Lopez and Angel Armenta, Vaughn Sexton, Marcus Barre, and Alec Jimenez, and Suarita's Vinci Garcia, Miggy Mejia, and Gabriel Felix earned second-team honors. And Suarita's Aiden Martinez and Alex Leon and Walden Grove's Sebastian Gallardo and Guy Jalpalos also earned three-time honors. And that will take care of the reading for the Green Valley News this morning. Mark DeGroft with you, reminding you that if you miss a program, you can always get it on demand at sunsounds.org. And all you have to do is left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio, and then under Programming Links, left-click on Demand Podcast. You can now listen to Sun Sounds on your favorite Echo Dot or any other smart home device. Thank you for listening. Again, Mark DeGroft with you, wishing you a very pleasant day. Stay cool, drink water, and remember it's hot out.